I feel, and so pretty that I hardly can believe I'm real. See the pretty girl in that mirror there. Who can that attractive girl be?
Welcome to episode 240 of After the Credits, the Littlest Hobo Media Spew for July
2018.
Yes. I am your co-host, Farid Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen, Alex Trex enthusiast.
Dale.
Alex Trebek enthusiast.
Did I not say that?
No, for a minute, I'm like, I don't know who she's talking about.
I didn't quite catch it either.
Okay. So guys.
Hit and a fail.
It seems like the energy is still for the moment, isn't it? So what have you been watching? I know we've said we haven't been that, you know, watching that much stuff because I don't know why.
I'm going to say right up front, I have been playing a PS4 video game named Horizon Zero Dawn still, but I finished. It was a lot of fun. Highly recommended.
I can honestly say I have never in my life finished a game.
Fallout. That's the only one I've ever finished.
Dan Fallout. Started Fallout.
I love Fallout.
He's a big fan.
Yeah, I don't have much either because I changed my persona in my medieval society I belong to. And in 3 weeks, I basically tried to get about 4 years worth of building in about 3 weeks. So I've been neglecting a lot of stuff.
I have no excuse. None. I'm just lazy.
Summer. It's summer.
Ebbs and flows.
Pretty much. Yeah.
We're not getting paid for this.
No, and quite honestly, the only thing that kind of padded my list is I realized when I looked at what I'd seen that before I went on holidays, I'd actually seen a bunch of movies. So it wasn't quite as bad because I legitimately haven't seen a movie basically since I got back.
I have to say that Quiet Earth did not like Terminal. Whoever did the review there really
did. The new review that just went out?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did kind of a semi-review when I saw it because I did an interview with somebody. One of the cast members. And so I didn't do a full review. I did kind of like a capsule thing when I did the intro. But yeah, I saw that Simon had seen it at Edinburgh Film Festival and he was not a fan.
Definitely not a fan.
No, I liked it a lot more than he did. Let's just say that. I mean, I didn't love it, but I could totally get what he was going for, and I did enjoy it.
That was the weird thing is I didn't find his criticisms unfounded. I just, maybe in spite of those, I still...
Agreed.
Still enjoyed it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the thing where you watch it and you can both see the flaws, but one person can still get over it and enjoy it, and the other person can't.
Yeah, I've definitely been there.
Yeah, and I was definitely on the, I could actually let it go this time and sort of enjoy it. So
nice.
Yeah, so what have we been watching? I know, Colleen, you have at least one thing in common.
On Netflix, yes. I watched Glow Season 2.
Okay, so how fast did you watch Glow Season 2?
I attempted to do it all in one day, and then sort of like I have to wake up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, go work, and I was like, damn it! So it was actually two parts. So
Dan and I watched it over a weekend, over 2 days.
Still haven't started, maybe because I'm afraid of precisely that.
Well, this is it. Like, we started watching, we're like, we'll watch another episode, and then Saturday night, we're like, how did we get through the whole season already?
3-day weekend's coming up.
Oh, so good. You won't need the whole weekend.
I mean, they're only half an hour, but still, no, that means that I can watch it and still not feel guilty because I didn't do anything else all weekend.
That is true. Oh, it's so good. So good. Such a good season. And it's funny because Dan, like, remembers Glow. Like, he remembers the wrestling. And he's like, no, I can't remember how they actually got on TV. And so in the last episode, he's like, okay, that's how it happened. Now it's all coming back. Oh, it's such a good season.
Oh,
that show is so good. Mark Maron is so perfect.
And the improvisation that's going on. Like, at the one point, she just grabs a random kid and basically tells Liberty Bell, is like, I have your child.
Yeah, it's just, it's so genius. Yeah. And the drama is so good. And, there's just nothing bad to say about this show.
We'll have a wedding in our final episode.
And it kind of makes you think, okay, what? Phil, now I know what the WWE guy whose name is just escaped me, where he got his ideas for the weddings in the ring.
Oh,
the soap opera like
it's full on soap opera. Oh, yeah.
Totally. Ed McMahon. No,
McMahon. Yeah,
it wasn't Ed McMahon.
Yeah, that was Johnny Carson.
Yeah, that's why I kind of went. But it's McMahon something or other. But whatever. McMahon. Besides the point,
Chairman McMahon.
Yeah, but that show so good. Anything else?
No, that's it for basically any kind of television, visual kind of stuff.
Huh.
Dale, any TV for you?
Yeah, a little bit. The Good Witch wrapped up. That's my Hallmark guilty pleasure.
Is Christina Bell or something? Kristen Bell, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, like I said before, I need a show that I know exactly where I stand, and it's always going to be happy ending. Reverie, which I was on the fence about last time, has been keeping me interested with the plot stuff. So that's been fun. Dietland, really on the fence before. I am really enjoying it. Like,
Dietland?
I don't know if they're doing a good job. Like, for they're exploring like power and gender in a way that I am not seeing anywhere else on TV, and I am really enjoying it. And I have no idea if they're doing it like in a sensitive way or insensitive way or a good job or a bad job. All I know is like, I'm not seeing this anywhere else. I like it's the ideas they're throwing out. I mean, there's a woman terrorist group, and killing men who are shit bags. And they're having a discussion while this is going on. Like, it's not mindless. They're having this discussion about how do you make advances without actually holding some power, and what is power? And I'm loving it. Like, and I'm not saying they have the answers, but they have like this huge cross representation of characters, so that you don't have one actor to has to represent 50 different kinds of aspects of things, and they're exploring lots of things I'm finding really interesting. So
okay, I am adding that one back to my list.
I am enjoying it, and I also think for some people it's going to be a bit triggering, because it is dealing with some like really
heavy
core emotional issues. So there's that warning in it that I think there might be some issues in there that some people maybe don't want to see on TV.
Okay.
But yes, I personally am enjoying the hell out of it. And
okay,
just
that's really good to
wait. And it also has a little bit of a batshit crazy aspect to it. It's like, what the hell did,
that's what the trailer kind of, that's why I didn't actually watch it, because the trailer just was so all over the place, and I couldn't actually, like, I could see the various parts, like the whole like there's the part about the woman who is trying to lose weight, like the pressures of society, and then there's this whole thing with the people trying to kill the guys, and I'm like, I don't know how these two things fit together, and the trailer does no job of explaining it, so I'm just gonna wait until somebody actually watches it and lets me know if it's any good. So I'm sold now. I'll have to check it out, and I just really like Marty Noxum, so
I'm really curious to hear. Like, I haven't talked to anyone else that's seen it, so I mean, AMC's hard, so yeah, I'm really interested to hear what other people think of it, because I suspect that, because just the way they're doing it, people are going to have a very personal reaction. Cloak and Dagger, I'm also enjoying. I guess other people are too, because I just read it was renewed for their next season.
Okay.
Which is cool. And oh man, there is a new cheesy movie TV show called The Outpost. It's kind of a fantasy sword and sandals.
Dude, so there's a story behind this.
Okay.
So the people that make this, it's on the CW, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the people that make this, I think they're called Mythica Entertainment. I kickstarted their first movie like a decade ago.
Really?
So they make... this is their bread and butter, is making giant, epic, like fantasy movies, like on a ridiculous budget.
So much bad CGI.
And this is it. Like, they've kind of mastered the fine balance of fun storytelling with like super cheesy CGI, and they managed to sell this. It's also Kickstarted, and they've managed to sell it to TV.
Nice.
And every day I get at least once, sometimes, I don't think it's every day, it's like at least once a week, I get an email about how the episode is airing on such and such a day. Be sure you use your social media hashtags. I haven't even seen a trailer. I don't know what it's about.
It kind of reminds me the story aesthetic. Like I said, the visual aesthetic is really low budget.
Xena.
You have to get over that. But actually, The Seeker is probably, in terms of story aesthetic, closer to the kind of story it is. Like, it wants to be serious. It's not taking the piss like Xena was and Hercules.
But I mean, like, the... when I think of Xena and Hercules, what I think of is like really terrible CG.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's kind of what I
don't remember the terrible CG so much.
And there may have not been that much, but that's what I remember in my mind of why I never actually watched the show.
But so far, I've only seen two episodes, and it's been kind of fun, and it scratches an itch for something that isn't out there. So we'll see.
And one thing I will say for them is most of their movies have like female leads. Like
and this one does.
Yeah, that seems to be a trademark, which I am 150% behind. Keep on making your stuff. Keep on giving us females a kick ass. I'm in. So I'm kind of curious. Is it worth watching? Is it worth checking out?
I think it's worth checking out. Okay. It's kind of, I think it's still finding its, well, okay. So in terms of being like engaged in the episodes, I was engaged in the first two episodes. They didn't feel draggy. There was a few moments where I was just like giggling, like, oh, that's bad. But I was giggling like a good natured. It wasn't like, oh, God damn it. What? So I enjoyed the first two episodes. The story, I'm still waiting to see if the story is going to go someplace in terms of a show arc that is like interesting and not patronizing.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to tell at this point.
Okay.
But it definitely, it is dealing like just exactly like you said, like these epic archetypes, and it's kind of taking itself a bit seriously, and it's like, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so I don't have a whole lot of new stuff. I only have one new show, but I wanted to mention a couple. So first is Killing Eve is now on Bravo.
Nice.
So if you're in Canada and you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Watch the show. It's amazing. Thanks, Dale.
Sandra Oh is nominated.
That's right. Handmaid's Tale has wrapped season two.
I still haven't started it.
I'm convinced. I'm just absolutely convinced that Offred / June is determined never to leave Gilead. Because she actually made an attempt at the beginning of season two that almost got her there. And beyond, like, it wasn't her fault that she got caught. Like, it just happened. But man, the second half of the season is a lot of her just like, it's not feeling sorry for herself. It's just like, why do you continue staying? And in my mind, I know that, you know, she's going to fight the power from within, like fight from within. I'm like, fuck, do you really want to do that? Like, these people are so terrible. Just let them self-implode because you know what's going to happen. But, oh, that show, just if you watch it, do yourself a favor. Do your mental psyche a favor. Do not watch it. Like, don't try to binge it because you will literally kill your spirit.
Ooh.
It's so
You aren't the first
depressing.
Person I heard
It's like
say
two
that.
Episodes at most. And then just give yourself a break because otherwise you will legit going to want to kill yourself. It's so depressing. But really good, but so depressing. The 100? Fuck, just kill Octavia already. Bill and I have this, like Bill from Green Screen of Death. We have been messaging each other back and forth for like 4 weeks, basically saying every week it's like, how is Octavia? How has somebody not killed her yet? Because she is now way beyond redemption.
I'm like two episodes behind. I don't know just how batshit crazy. The last one I saw, she was basically about to start a fucking war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is ongoing.
Oh, nice.
And she's still doing things to start this war that just... It just gets worse for her. Like,
yeah.
I don't see an ending to the season where she lives.
Oh, excellent.
Like... She's going to have to go.
Of course.
She's going to have to go. But I still love the show. It's still great.
So good.
So I have to ask. I get a character name. Because we've talked about this before. Brell? Have you, do you recognize a character named Brel?
No. Let me look at the picture.
Only
I can't say I recognize even the actress. I
think she, where's her? Anyway, she is in the D&D improv.
Oh yeah. Okay, yeah. No, her picture doesn't even look familiar. She might be
when like, she's in makeup, she looks quite totally, a bit different.
Okay,
yeah.
That would probably
maybe
be
maybe she's
it.
The military commander.
No, like, Sangeeta she's a Sangeeta delegate, whatever that is.
Oh, Brel. Okay. So she's one of the religious ones.
Oh yeah.
She's one of those. Okay. And the only show that I've added is Sharp Objects. This is the new HBO prestige drama with Amy Adams, based on Gillian Flynn's best-selling novel, directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, who did Big Little Lies.
What's the...
So the,
I don't think I've even heard of this.
So the, and then maybe it's prestige in just like the general terms because of the people involved. I don't know. And because it's on HBO, but I've only seen the first two episodes and Amy Adams plays a kind of washed up reporter. She's obviously dealing with something because she's drinking a lot. She's basically an alcoholic, somewhat functioning alcoholic. And she goes home. So she comes from this very small town. There's also obviously been some trauma in her past from like why she left. Her mother is played by Patricia Clarkson, who is like this, the town is kind of like this, not backwards, but this very sort of poor town. And her mother is like loaded. Like she and her family come from money and there's some drama between her and her mother, but she is sent home for work to do a piece or a series of reports on some missing girls that have disappeared. And they kind of the her editor figures that if she does this, it could be her ticket back to sort of good graces with work, because obviously she's been having a hard time. And in the first episode, she basically goes home and starts asking all these questions and reconnects with her mother, and it doesn't go well. And it's just very angsty. But it's Amy Adams who does angsty really, really well. And the show just kind of looks amazing because Jean-Marc Vallée has like a knack for, you know, making things look great. But there's obviously a really interesting kind of mystery underneath the surface, which I'm curious about. The show is, honestly, if it was anywhere else with any other cast of characters, I probably wouldn't bother. But because it's Amy Adams and Patricia Clarkson and Vallée, I'm kind of like sticking around. But it's only two episodes in, so I can't really judge whether it's going to go well or not. But it looks interesting enough so far.
Okay.
Any movies?
Not for me.
Yeah, you must have some.
Oh, this is so not what my usual lineup is. So my weird movie. Oh, no, my buddy isn't weird, but the movies we watch are.
Yes.
Is like,
is this Ian?
Ian, yes. Is on like long vacation, so we haven't been having our movie nights, and video games. Anyway, Deadpool 2.
Yay!
Which. The gags and the scenes were great, like right up there what I expected. I thought the story wasn't as strong, so
agreed.
The overall movie kind of suffered for that. But my
still
God, that little
fun.
End Easter egg thing.
Oh, so
was
good,
so,
right?
You're welcome, Canada.
Yeah, best.
Amazing. Ant-Man and the Wasp, woo-hoo. Like this sequel was as good as the original for me.
Okay.
I loved the whole movie, and it was just, I'm beginning to understand the kinds of epic actions that I like. You know, they have to have a little bit of comedy in there, and there was for this.
Yeah.
And actually, what's her, Carmen, someone, she's got about three names, did a really good job as Ghost, I thought. Like, anyway, Rampage, which we talked about, that was
The Rock. Yeah, The Rock and the Giant Ape.
Yeah. It was really good. I mean, it was okay. I mean, good in context,
yes,
right?
Yes.
It is like just exactly what I look for in a summer popcorn kind of sci-fi-ish kind of.
Okay.
And
The Wolf Flies.
There great. Was, it was like very tongue-in-cheek, which was great. The characters are great. The chemistry was great. the premise was no more insane than any other other movie. And the action-y parts were still like in context, like didn't go like superhuman kind of, I mean, lots of little things that I liked about it.
I'm thrilled to hear this because I'm not joking. For 3 days, Dan and I, like basically Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, we kind of came home and we're like, oh, let's watch a movie. And I have been fighting him on this because I refuse to watch it. And it's the one he keeps pushing. So we've instead been watching like random documentaries on Netflix. So I'm glad to hear that I can actually give into this.
I think that you'll enjoy it, but let me know if you don't, because
we're just different curious. People. Okay, I'm in.
Maze Runner: The Death Cure.
Oh yeah, okay. So
it was.
I haven't seen it yet, so.
Oh, it was actually a perfectly fine by the numbers action movie. The action-y stuff didn't maybe skirted the edge, but didn't go on like too crazy, insanely long. I think my only complaint with it. Is it just felt so tropey with the way the characters finally wound up. I think actually from when the story was actually written in that, it was... We can talk once you've seen it. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
And the last one was Set It Up. That's the Zoe Deutsch, Lucy Liu, Office Assistant.
Yes, yes.
It was charming. Right. I loved the hell out of it.
Right. I know. It's super cute. I love it. Zoe Deutsch is just great. She's fabulous.
The whole cast like worked really well.
Agreed.
And again, the okay parts.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, with Rampage too. Like some of the portions in there, it was like these little pleasant surprises. It's like, oh, that normally doesn't happen in a movie. So,
but yep. the opening scene in Set It Up where she's like running around doing all that shit for her boss. That was, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't admit how old I am and that I'm kind of doing that job. Yeah. Okay. It was a little too close for comfort. Let's just say.
I think there's a lot of people that could identify. I'm actually happy to say that I've never had a job like that.
And that's
that,
not even my job title.
I have known people that have worked for bosses like that. Like, no boundaries, calls like anytime, please do this for me, lost without their assistance.
Yeah, there isn't that. Like, it's not that aspect of it. It's just like all the personal stuff that I have to deal with.
Oh,
it's not part of my job description.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do it because, you know, what else am I going to do? It's a small office. But, yeah.
So, that's it. That's like literally all the movies I saw. I'm not even holding anything back.
I haven't seen that many. I've probably seen as many as you have, but I finally saw Ant-Man.
And?
I really liked it.
Yay.
I thought it was really good. I had a hell of a time finding Ant-Man because they've removed it from Netflix. So, of course, I'm like, of course, they've removed Ant-Man after I tried to actually see it. But no, I thought it was really funny. I just generally like Paul Rudd. I think he's perfectly cast. And his chemistry with Evangeline Lilly is really great. I thought it was wonderful. And I'm really excited to see the sequel.
I was thinking, because I had read something about how she fought for certain aspects of the character. And so I was kind of looking for them. And I hate to say it, I think I'm kind of blind
to
the
too.
Kinds of things that she was talking about. But on the other hand, I thought the character interactions and the things were like really good.
Yeah, agreed. I thought it was pretty good. I saw A Quiet Place. I forced Dan to watch A Quiet Place with me, the John Krasinski horror movie, where there are these beasts that, you know, can only...
Oh, right.
By sound. It's really solid, like particularly the first third where there's literally like no sound is super impressive. Like technically it's really, really well done. And then it kind of drags a little bit in the middle, but the last part is kind of badass. I'm not giving anything away. Emily Blunt's pregnant. Like, so you think, how the fuck is she going to give birth? And then they have this baby to deal with. Noise. And they kind of deal with it. Like, it's not... And it kind of makes sense. It's kind of... It's really, really well done. But, the look on her face, the look on Emily Blunt's face in the final moment of the movie, totally worth it. Totally worth it. So good. I recommend it. I really, really liked it. I watched Red Sparrow, on your recommendation. And I am really glad I did, because I really like this movie a lot. And I think I liked it maybe more than you did, because you'd give me the warning that it wasn't like a typical like spy movie. And so that's not what I was expecting. I kind of went in just blind to it. And other than the fact that the accent is really annoying because it comes and goes fucking constantly, I thought it was really, really well done. And some of the themes that they get out at are not things that I expected and that you would expect to see in like a spy movie. And I really like the ending. I really did not see that coming. It kind of completely blindsided me. Like, I thought for sure they were going to go in one direction, and then they go in this totally unexpected way, and I didn't see it coming at all. And it just, it surprised me. The whole thing just surprised me. And I thought it was really good. And other than the, and I don't know how to deal with the fact that, you know, the accent is part of the performance, and how can it still be a good performance if the accent is so bad? But I thought she was really good, other than the accent.
Yes.
I'm totally impressed. I really, really like this. I would totally see a sequel. I would want to see what she's up to next.
I didn't even think sequel, actually, but now you mentioned it, I'm curious.
I want to see what she's up to next. So I watched Lim Ramsey's You Were Never Really Here, which is stupendous, is the right term. It's a super simple story. So Joaquin Phoenix plays basically a killer for hire. And he is also suffering from some sort of past trauma. I don't know if it's like PTSD from like the military, but he's dealing with something. And the way that he takes jobs is like this super convoluted thing, because he's also looking after his mother. And so he's like kind of this, it's weird because he's not really a soft guy, but he's really caring to his mother. And he cares about like innocence. And but like for the jobs, like he is going to be as brutal as possible. And it's the story about he basically is told to do a job, and he discovers it's not like the job that he's paid to do turns out to be like bad. And then he goes to try to get revenge, and things just go from bad to worse. The most interesting part, one of the most interesting parts of the movie, is the sound design, which is nuts. It is perhaps the most amazing sound design I've heard in a movie in like a decade. It reminded me of The Conversation. Like the first time I saw The Conversation, that's what came to mind. It is so unique. So all unique. Right. And it has a couple of like kind of brutal moments, but generally speaking, it's really, really well done. And Joaquin Phoenix is really good in it. It's just excellent. I highly recommend it. I also saw Deborah Granik's new movie, Leave No Trace. She is the director of Frozen River. It's the movie with Ben Foster and Thomas McKenzie about an ex-soldier who is living in the woods with his daughter. It's really, really great. It's this very sort of understated drama about, you know, this guy and his daughter just living out in the wilderness. It has some interesting, like, I wasn't really sure how I felt about it right afterwards, because I kind of felt like he was super selfish, because he puts her in a lot of danger. And for a guy that loves his daughter that much, it's like, why would you do that to your kid? Especially when she has told you more than once she doesn't want to live like this. And then when I sort of sat with it a little bit more, I kind of came around on it. But either way, it's fascinating. It's really, really well made. The performances are excellent. Ben Foster is great. And it really made me think about some stuff. So the themes were super interesting. So I recommend it. And it's rated like PG. Like nothing happens. It's like one of these movies where everything happens and nothing really happens. It's really, really good. I saw How It Ends on Netflix. This is the Theo James, Forrest Whitaker apocalyptic movie. Oh, dude.
Doesn't ring a bell at all.
They just dropped it on Netflix like 2 weeks ago. It's really, like, the concept is really neat. Like, it's basically this guy and his soon-to-be father-in-law, played by Forrest Whitaker, traveling from Chicago to Washington to find his daughter, his fiance, and just a bunch of stuff happens. It's like a road movie, except the apocalypse has come and you don't really know what's happened. It's pretty interesting. And actually, like, the finale is really great and it kind of just ends and you're like, why did it fucking end there? But I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, it is what it is. It's too long, but it's not bad. And then I Feel Pretty, the Amy Schumer movie where she bunks her head and thinks she's beautiful and then bunks her head again and thinks she's not beautiful. And I remember I was a bit worried when I watched the trailer how they were going to handle it. And I am happy to report it's kind of amazing. It's not like Amy, like the typical Amy Schumer funny comedy. Like, it has some funny moments, but it's also really real. And the message is just super positive. They handle it super well. There is really no evil person. Like, they play Michelle Williams up to maybe be like this bitch that, you know, is gonna like talk everybody down, and you can kind of get, they play the character so that you know what kind of person she is, but then they don't go there. Like, there really isn't like a bad person in the movie. It's just like society is just shit,
right,
basically, and you have to believe in yourself, and that's that. And I loved it. I thought it was really, really good.
I was holding off on that one, but
no, I will recommend it to anybody.
Cool.
I think it's great. I wish some of the comedy wasn't quite as raunchy, because then it would be, I think, more appropriate for like preteens, because the message kind of fits in there. But yeah, make your teens watch this. It's great. Like, it's super good. I highly recommend it. And then I want to mention this because I've been watching a lot of stuff for Spark, and this is the movie that has blown my mind. So keep an eye on it if it's playing a festival near you. It's called The Lily in Paris. It's directed by Michelle Ocelot, who is like a renowned French director. It's fucking amazing. So it starts as this story of this young African girl who has ended up in Paris through this bizarre story. And she meets this kid who is a delivery boy in Paris, and he offers to take her around to show her, to introduce her to basically all these cool people. And she wants to meet everybody that's neat. So it starts as this very sweet story about like discovering Paris through this kid who knows everybody. And then it gets really dark, and then it just gets darker, and then you're like, what the fuck? It's so not kid-friendly. It is so good, though. I love this movie. I watched it, I'm like, I need to book this movie. It's so good. So yeah, keep an eye out for it. It's amazing. And that's it. Sorry, I talked for a while.
That's okay.
Books.
Books. I got two.
Child. Preston and Child.
Preston and Child. Both of them.
At some point, you're
going to... And I have another two queued up for next month.
Okay, so my question is, are you almost out of Preston and Child?
No.
Are they like the Hardy Boys and the Nancy Drews? Like,
well, they've been writing them for quite a while. Like, I guess one guy has an idea, then he tells the other guy, he writes some, then the other guy edits it and then adds stuff, and I don't know how they...
So, but how many...
They live on opposite coasts, and they're writing books. Lots of books.
Okay, well, at least you have, like, you know, you have a stash.
Yeah, well, I've only read one of the Gideon Crew novels, so I have those to look forward to eventually. And then they've written a bunch of stuff by themselves, too, because award-winning authors kind of thing.
All right.
So, first one, both of them are fairly old in the Pendergast series. One is called Cabinet of Curiosities, where they knock down this building and they find, I think it's like 37 bodies basically entombed underneath this building, and... Basically, someone now is starting to kill people with the same modus operandi as the last one, and Pendergast has to solve it, and there's mystery rooms, and there's weird surgical stuff, and it's digging up basically the floors of rooms you just basically rented. so that was good. And then the other one I am not quite done yet, Still Life with Crows. Basically, bodies are being dismembered in cornfields way out in the Midwest, and Pendergast decides to take a vacation out in the middle of nowhere. Doesn't even have his car, so he's hitchhiking and taking the bus. And he hires this this young felon in training, this young woman who's gotten lots of attention from the law as his driver, and she drives around in this beat up oil smoking sort of gremlin. So she was her driver, and she's just now been upgraded to his assistant because she has a morbid curiosity about what's going on, all these dismemberments and that. So it's good stuff. Good stuff.
I love the craziness of these books.
They are mental. They are a honest to goodness sort of like police FBI sort of mystery, but then they throw in all this weird occultist shit.
I just the mix of the two things is just kind of awesome.
I freaking love these books. Yeah.
Dale, do you got any bugs?
I sadly do not.
That's okay. I only have one, and I meant to read more, but I took it with me on holidays thinking, I'm going to finish this. I didn't crack it open. I think I cracked it open once by the pool for like 10 minutes, and then I fell asleep. So I read In a Dark, Dark Wood by Ruth Ware. She of the same woman that did The Cabin in The Woman in Cabin 10 or whatever. Oh, yeah. She's apparently quite popular at the moment. It's interesting. It's about this author who writes mystery novels, who's invited to a hen party. It's British.
Yeah.
So she's invited to a hen party for this girl that used to be her best friend, like in the 10th grade, but who she hasn't seen in like 20 years. And she is, but one of their mutual friends convinces her to go. So they go to this hen, and shit just goes from bad to worse. And she still can't figure out why she's at the hen. So much drama, people. So much drama. The fact that, like, there is this mystery that she drags on for, like, 3/4 of the book. Because they're obviously, like, so the base, I'm going to, because this is old, so I'm going to spoil it. So the woman whose name, the main character whose name I can't even remember, she goes to the cabin. The woman that's getting married was her best friend in, like, the 10th grade. She is now marrying this other girl's ex-boyfriend, and they had a really bad breakup. But they don't tell you what happened for it to be a really bad breakup for like 3/4 of the book. They're always like, there's this weird history. There's this history everybody knows about. It's haunted her for like 20 years. She's only dated 3 guys. She hasn't gotten over this guy yet. And we don't know why, because we don't know how they broke up. And this is apparently the big mystery I'm supposed to care about. Well, I could tell you by halfway through the book, I didn't fucking care.
Yeah.
But I still finished the freaking thing.
Nice.
It's okay at best. Okay at best. It. You don't have to ever read it because apparently they're making a movie.
Okay.
Because Reese Witherspoon has optioned it. I don't know. It's okay at best. I didn't love it.
So, glowing review from you.
Totally.
That's right.
Though I think I am going to go back. I've started reading Binti, which is this amazing sci-fi, I want to say novella, because it's very short. I think it's only like 90 some odd pages long. It's fucking amazing. Yeah. Like, it is amazing. So I think I'm going to read that series, because I think there's 3 books in total. So I'll talk about that a little bit more next time.
There are a ton of books that I would actually like to read. I have this list. I don't want to buy hardcover or not hardcover. Oh. I don't want to buy physical because I'm probably going to be moving.
Yes.
And I already have a bunch of books that I have to find a new home for. And I'm like, do I want to get into the whole Amazon thing? I don't feel like I want to. So
I tell you what, I've had 2 e-readers. The first one I used so much I broke it, like it died.
Yeah.
I did replace it. And I have used it on and off, but I have been drawn, like I, for a while there, that's all I read was ebooks, and I've been drawn back to regular books.
I liked my Kobo.
Yeah.
I mean, it was underpowered and stuff, but the problem is at the time I could get non-DRM stuff for it. And some of the stuff I want to read now is not that simple
anymore. Yeah, so, I mean, I find I still use mine, but nowhere near as much as I did. Yeah.
I haven't looked at mine in probably 2 years.
Yeah. For me, it comes in waves, but I generally have been sticking to...
You mostly book cross the books when you're done with them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and
that's a cool strategy.
Well, yeah, and that was the other hard part about the e-books, because, like, and I think that might be why I kind of fell away from it after a while, because it's like half the joy is being able to take the books to book crossing and going, okay, you got to read this, it's really cool, and I like that aspect of reading and sharing the books. So I think that's kind of why I've been drawn more and more back to, and you know, we mentioned book crossing, but maybe people don't know what it is. So book crossing has been around for like probably going on 20 years now. It's you can find it at bookcrossing.com, and it's basically like tracking, it's like the track to your dollar bill by a serial number. So you register the book, you open a free account, you register the book, it generates an ID number that's specific to that one book. And the idea is that you journal the novel and then you leave it somewhere or you give it to somebody to find, and they'll read it and they'll journal it. And the person that finds the book doesn't necessarily have to have an account. They can leave a comment anonymously. And the idea is that you can follow the book as it sort of moves from person to person. Well,
at its core, book crossing is just leave a book someplace for somebody to find.
Catch and release booking.
Yeah. And then to kind of add some fun to it, they put this whole tracking thing.
Yes, so exactly.
If you find a book crossing book, it's always thrilling for the person that actually put it
registered
out.
Registered it, yeah.
To say that you found it and what you did with it.
Yeah.
But it's not mandatory.
No, it's totally not. And I mean, when we tell people, like, we have a meetup group that meets twice a month, and really it's gotten to the point where we don't even tell people to book cross unless they want to. It's just an excuse to get together and talk about books in a non-typical book group kind of atmosphere, because that's one of the things we moved away up from really early, was all reading the same book and discussing it, because like we don't all like the same stuff.
No, it's a lot of fun when someone has brought some books and you can go like, oh, so what's this,
and actually have a conversation.
And for the people that you know their tastes, you can pretty quickly figure out if it's going to be for you or not.
No, totally. And, you know, the books all sort of, they tend to come back. So you'll find that, you know, at some point, like 3 months down the road, you can all have a conversation about the same book because you've all read it. It's kind of neat. It's just kind of fun. I mean, I enjoy it. And it's really one of the reasons I keep reading, too. So I like to share them.
I've stopped going to using the e-reader more than for anything else, because there's used bookstores again. For a while, they all disappeared.
Yeah,
now
they've started kind of popping up here.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like Coquitlam has, what, 2 new ones? I think Coquitlam has at least one. That's okay. I think Coquitlam has at least one new bookstore that just opened within the last couple of months.
Port Coquitlam has one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, Port Coquitlam.
That's crazy. Yeah, I know, like, they mostly disappeared from North Vancouver here. I think there might be one left, but they didn't seem to be getting a lot of new stuff in there, so I kind of stopped being regular.
And Value Village sucks for it. It just doesn't have the atmosphere of a used bookstore.
Yeah.
It doesn't, but I actually have found quite a good selection of books there. I don't particularly like going in there, but every once in a while when I do, I always walk out with a couple of gems.
See, I go to thrift stores all the time. I went today and got a sake set at one of them. But the something about the bookstore, I can't go to Value Village and browse for books. I'm like,
no, it's not the same.
I need to go into some area that's claustrophobic with shelves too high. That
sneezing from the book dust.
Del Toro was in town for, I guess, a couple of days, and he posted a picture from McLeod's books.
McLeod's,
And everybody local that reads is like, oh my God, I totally know where that is.
Yeah. I work like, I don't know, 4 blocks from McLeod's.
Yeah. I love that place. But it's totally a hazard to go in there.
I need to go to Brown's Mystery Bookstore again. It's been a while. So
I need to get out to White Dwarf. That's way out at UBC.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been there in, legitimately, 5 years.
I don't think I've ever been there.
It's a nice little bookstore.
Sci-fi fantasy. It's wonderful.
It's nice. Because they do both new and used, right?
Just new.
Just new.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Unless it's changed. Like I said, I haven't been there for
a long time. I think I vaguely have in my mind that the last time I was there, it was just new books, but I wasn't sure if they were new and used. I still like Renaissance books. I think they have now moved to 10th in New Westminster. It's a pretty great little.
Oh, wall. Yeah. We went there once. Yeah, after it used to be on or something.
Just up from 6th.
Yeah. So they started on 12th. Yeah. That's where he first had the shop for years. And then he moved on to on 6th, just up from just Columbia. Off. And now he's moved again and he's over on 10th.
10th. So that's right near the SkyTrain. Like,
so.
It's in New Westminster.
If we have any listeners left.
Oh, damn. Yeah, sorry.
Tell us your favorite used bookstore. I mean, seriously, it doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah.
And will you promise to tweet it? Like, I don't have the audience, but.
No, I'll totally tweet it.
We'll tweet them out.
For sure.
Or it's always post them on the list next time or something.
Oh, yeah, totally. It'd be great to have like a little list of places. Because that's one of the fun things about like traveling is going to find that little bookstore.
Oh, I love. Yes. Because, I mean, it's always a problem carrying physical books when you travel, too. So to hit someplace. And then to find a couple jewels that you can enjoy while that's wonderful.
I love bookstores in other foreign countries. Totally. Oh, man.
One of my favorite parts about Vegas was going to that used bookstore that's always on
I miss that one.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. Like, Dan was like poking in the window because, I mean, they have books in there that are just like, wow. Like, wow, I took a bunch of pictures. I was so beside myself. But we actually walked in, and the lady that was working in there was super nice. And she showed us a bunch of stuff, and it was just, it was amazing. I mean, we were never going to buy anything. There was nothing in there I could afford if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But it was so awesome. It was such an experience. It was total rush. I loved it. Because they're in like the Venetian or something, like some super, Caesars or like one of the fancy-wancy
big hotels. Casino things. Oh, yeah.
But it was amazing. Yeah, only a few. Like, I'm sure they never get anybody in there. Like, seriously. Well, they might, but yeah, it was awesome.
They rely on rich people to come in. Go, I have a bookcase. I need exactly 12 feet worth of books.
You can buy Planet Money.
Yeah.
Based on color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally love that episode. But okay, now we're really sidetracked.
Yeah.
So
This is what happens when we don't fill our brains with
this
content.
This is it. This is it.
I have also been playing a game, Pokemon Go.
Oh.
I got sucked in by some construction workers of all things, not children, not whatever, construction workers playing Pokemon Go.
Are you a member of the Pokemon Go Facebook group?
No, there's a Pokemon Go Facebook.
Oh, dude, it's huge.
I don't think I want to be on that. But,
oh, you do.
But
in there.
I love this concept of like this stereotypical construction worker, hard hat, butt cleavage, pass me a beer and let's go get some Pokemon.
Well, and the funny thing is
Saxon does not look like that at all.
No, and the thing is, if you look at like the hardcore Pokemon players, it's like the hardcore people that were always Pokemon fans and then random people that you would never think would be into Pokemon. And everyone else in the middle has fallen away.
Yeah. Well, so if you are a Pokemon Go player and you want to friend me, I am C8H10M402 is Go is my name. And my friend number is 8828339867111.
Okay, so. And this is stuff that we will put on the website.
Yes.
So if you want to be Colleen's Pokemon Go friend.
That's right.
Name rank and Pokemon number.
Exactly.
Pretty much. So this is where we want to come on by atcpod.ca for, you know, they're only going to come for Colleen's.
That's probably true. Gift. That's right. Friend me and I will send you a gift.
A good gift?
I don't know. It's just random. You go to Poke Spots, you spin them, and you get gifts you can send to your friends, but you can't open up the gifts.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's a good one.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You never know. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the September preview.
No.
So I know. Until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.